Get out of the car. Colin Martin coming back to it. Dennis with a left foot. It's in. And for Vegas. Oh, and it'll be an easy one to walk this one in for a second of the night. Lindo Feca with his third of the season. Right through ball. And there is the official third on the assist for Carlson. It's Fissore.
Welcome to Roots Pod, an audio production of Roots Blog and member of the Rootscast Broadcast Network. This is Aaron here with just John this week. Peter, in his inebriated state following Oakland's win over San Diego this past weekend, may have committed some acts on federal land that are technically illegal. And so on the advice of counsel, he's gone to ground and will not be joining us. So far as I know, we're working on getting him a satellite phone to an undisclosed location, but hard to say whether we're going to be able to pull that off before the end of this podcast recording. But let's talk about that aforementioned win over San Diego Loyal 3-0 in the first round of the playoffs. Oakland gets in by the skin of their teeth on goal differential, takes that seventh spot and goes in and stomps all over the West's number two seed. I'm sure it feels even better to the players to have that victory as it does to the fans who watched it. It was, I don't know, euphoric, I think, maybe is a word I would use. That was so much fun to watch. I think for me, the biggest takeaway of the game, and this is not exactly a hot take, but to me, the biggest takeaway is that Oakland played a really disciplined game and San Diego did not. And that, even if you discount all of the red cards, at least two of which were deserved. Even if you discount all of that, you know, San Diego was not, they weren't getting the ball into threatening places. Oakland was preventing them from having really quality chances on net. And I think that Oakland deserved to win that game, even if you discount the fact that this game ended 11-8, which is a preposterous thing to say out loud. But That is how it ended. But John, let me just ask you what would you consider your big takeaway from this game?
Well, first off, how many times have you seen a 11-8 situation in your years watching the game?
Never. And I was really sort of I had to laugh when Stoneman was sent off, the third San Diego player to be sent off, for two like
stupid fouls,
actual football tackles, like American football tackle, while Oakland was breaking. Like, those are obvious yellows. That's a tactical foul. It's a yellow every single time. And he looks at the ref and says, "That's three." And it's like, "Well, yeah, buddy. Did you expect to get dispensation from the rules just because your team is already down two men? Like, come on."
Yeah, I agree, man. I mean, just going off of that, I mean, I think Amang's double yellow was justified. I mean, yeah, Jose did a great job instigating it, man, and putting Amang in trouble because it starts with Jose with a little sly shoulder to Amang, and then Amang charges up, runs right in front of the referee, and shoulders Jose, draws the foul, and then from that, Amang goes over, points at Jose, and pushes him in the face with his finger. I mean, in what world do you live in? Is that not a yellow? That's a yellow every single time, you know. Yeah. And people,
there was some embellishment. I think we can go ahead and admit there was some embellishment on the part of Jose here, but
there definitely was. But the referee was right there.
You can't be fronting like that on the field. Like, that's just not how it works.
You know, regardless of Jose, whether or not Jose flopped, I mean, it probably was going to be a yellow. The referee was literally right behind his shoulder. You see him come up instantly right after the shove, air quotes, a deadly aggressive point with his finger. I mean, you got to keep your head there. I mean, you let your team down, and then Guido comes up. We're not even on camera at this point. I assume that it happened so fast when I was in the game, you know, I didn't even realize that it happened. So, I mean, my assumption is he ran up into the referee with his body, and this referee was pissed off already. Second yellow. So, yeah, I mean,
even the announcers on TV were a little bit confused about what Guido had done. But yeah. I will say there was some remonstrating about Umang's second yellow, like, oh my God, Jose flopped. You know, how can you possibly give him a yellow for this? There did not seem to be any sort of dispute that Guido deserved the second yellow. So whatever he did, I don't think anyone was too perturbed by it, especially since they're already down. What's one more guy to be down at that point?
Yeah. I mean, even then, you know, you can go by with 9 players out there, or 10 players out there. You can survive, you know, to lose another guy right then and there. It kills your game. You know, teams have came back with down a man and have scored. And
Oakland, for instance, against San Diego.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and
I will say the lack of discipline. We should mention Oakland did a very good job of making them pay for this, but the lack of discipline is more than just the huge number of yellows that San Diego accumulated, but there was just some sloppiness to their play, and Oakland's second goal comes from that. You know, it's this underweighted back pass that the goalie doesn't really take charge of, and Lindo is just right there on top of him and gets probably the easiest goal of his career. I mean, the ball bounced right, but that's luck that you make, I think. And again, I think this is just an example of how Oakland was on their game in a way that San Diego was just not.
Yeah, it definitely looked, you know, for the ball to careem off of, you know, Lindo back into the goalie, you think that ball's going to fly out of bounds, and it just skips towards the net. You know, at halftime, I'm going to take credit for this. Me and a group of fans there, we put a little prayer circle. We said, we're going to win this game. We're going to score again in the second half.
A little summoning circle.
Yes, we did. We summoned this to happen. We spoke it into existence. And the ball just delicately rolls over the keeper, very fortunately, very opportunely, and into net. So here, you heard it first. The function manifested that one.
All right. Does the function have anything prepared as far as manifesting stuff for the next weekend?
Oh, it's going to take a lot of hoping and praying.
All right. I hope that everyone is on their game on that one, because
we're praying.
I think we're probably going to need some more luck.
All of the luck. I mean,
I don't say all the luck, but there's not a, especially in a single elimination knockout format like this, you got to have some luck. You know, there's rarely does any team make it through a single elimination knockout tournament without any luck, you know? That's just, it's not how it is.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, I mean, look at Charlie's goal in between a couple defenders. I mean, credit to him. I mean, that was perfectly hit ball. No time to think about it, which might be when Charlie is at his best.
I think I have to agree with that. I mean, it was just right there. He put his laces through it. He did it with such ease that you're like, why have we not seen this before? I know that's not the easiest shot in the world, but if you're capable of that, like, probably we should have seen more attempts from the edge of the area from this guy. But thank God it showed up when it did, you know?
Yeah, I mean, because at that point, you know, you could say that San Diego was controlling the action, you know, that especially that first half, despite going, you know, the one shot on target was the goal, and Roots had two shots going into the half, while San Diego had 8 attempts and 4 on target.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, hats off to the defense able to stay solidified. I mean, they had a good week of training, it seemed like. They were... it was the most fluid back line I think I've seen for a long time, to where everybody's in unison, moving. Everybody is getting back and putting a lot of effort in and reading the passing lanes, reading lines. It was impressive. I mean, especially after Fuenmayor went down, you know, an unplanned sub is never, you know, never in the card. But Emre did a great job. He came in, and it seemed that the captain's spark really fired up the crew. I mean, they really, there was no drop off. This, it seemed to be even a turning point.
I think you're right about the defensive performance. We have talked a lot in the last few weeks about how defense appears to be a focus of Delgado in a way that it wasn't for Guerra when he was on the sidelines. And there was clearly a defensive mindset going into this match. You know, they put a more classic defensive mid in the middle of the park, have that sort of 6-8 double pivot in the middle of the 3-4-3, as opposed to having Charlie Dennis back there for his playmaking abilities. And obviously it worked out, but it felt like they were playing for a 1-0 or something like that. But the defense was, I think, spot on. You look at the shot totals and whatnot. I know San Diego, they did control a lot of the game, especially early on, but I don't think they ever really tested Blanchett. Mm-hmm. They had their opportunities, but they weren't really quality opportunities. And so they're just putting a whole bunch of stuff right down the middle. And Paul has shown time and time again that he's capable of brilliant, spectacular saves. And he was just never called upon to make any of those saves in this match because the defense wasn't allowing San Diego to set up the kinds of opportunities where you get, you know, these brilliant shots and whatnot that Paul has to really, you know, show that he's got an S on his chest to save, basically.
Exactly. I mean, I think that mostly San Diego's best looks came in the first 15 minutes of the game, along with a shot that went high in really early minutes, might have been around the fifth or the sixth, where it was a good worked ball to him, a shot in the box, and it went over. But Paul's stop on the set piece in the 12th or 13th minute was really impressive. You know, it went through the wall. It was a hard shot, and he bobbled it for a second, but got a hand on it when Among tried to follow through. So when I rewatched that, I was like, wow, that was a really underrated save right there. A lot could have gone wrong there, you know, especially going through the wall. You know, you're losing sight of it, and then it's popping up so quickly, and he had to be in the perfect spot, and he was.
Yeah, it was a great performance all around. I think we, you know, for our Roots blog man of the match, we named the entire squad. It's just very difficult, especially after such a comprehensive performance, to separate any one guy who really stood out above the rest. I mean, everybody, I think, on the pitch contributed in some way. Carlson's movement, Carlson was, I think, quiet in the traditional sense in this game, but his presence, his movement up top has to be respected by the defense. And it's part of the reason why Lindo and Charlie were so effective in this game. And the center of the midfield, especially Nane and Fisore, had very good games. I think they're capable of even more than they showed, but that's in part because it's not like San Diego is really testing them. Jose did his thing, kept the tempo up, kept the team moving, kept the ball moving, drew the fouls. Yeah. Asokat and Rito, much the same thing. Just the ability to be able to spring Eduardo Rito down the side of the pitch is, I mean, they're so good at this point. They're so practiced in looking for those opportunities that it feels like every time they pass the ball to that side of the pitch, something exciting is going to happen. And then we've already talked about the back line and the keeper. I mean, it was just a beautiful performance. And I think it bodes well for this next match, which we're about to talk about against San Antonio, that they had a very good stretch that got them to the point total they needed to make the playoffs. And then the last game of the season, they put together a relative clunker against Pittsburgh, and they're able to just put it out of their mind and come back with maybe the best performance of the season in the first round of the playoffs. And confidence has got to be high, and it's going to need to be, because San Antonio is as good as San Diego was in the regular season. San Antonio is another beast entirely. They were so far clear at the top of the Western Conference that I don't think they're coasting necessarily, but they haven't really, really had anything to play for quite some time. And maybe that'll play into the Roots' hands, that San Diego hasn't had to turn up the intensity in the way that the Roots have for the last 2 months. Just to review, two matches against San Antonio this year. The first one, a 1-1 draw in San Antonio. Oakland's goal comes in the first half on a pretty nifty set-piece routine between Dennis and Azokar, who ultimately fed Nane, who put together, or excuse me, put home just an incredibly powerful header. it's an astonishing amount of power in a header. And then right on the stroke of halftime, basically, San Antonio was able to equalize. If you watch the highlights of that game, I don't remember thinking this at the time, but if you watch the highlights of that game, they were getting in behind on their right side quite a bit, and that's what happened on the goal. A runner in behind on the right centers the ball. There's too many San Antonio players in the middle of the box for Oakland to really deal with, and Adinaran puts it home. And then the second half was basically quiet. San Antonio had a late opportunity, but that was basically it. The halftime score, the halftime opportunities basically tell you everything you need to know there. Game two was a 2-0 San Antonio win here in Oakland at Laney. That game, hard to know exactly how much to take from it for a couple of reasons. First, it's San Antonio, and they are so good defensively that when you go down a goal, it's always going to be difficult. And they took advantage of a little Roots error very early on to get a goal within 5 minutes. Again, not a whole lot between the first goal and the second goal, but that's just how San Antonio plays so far as we can tell. You know, they'd powered the game down. They scored in, the fifth and the 85th minutes, both from Sam Adinaran, who maybe we should put a guy on here since he scored 3 goals against Oakland this season. But the other reason not to take too much off of that match is that Oakland's starting 11 featured no Carlson, who was out with injury, and no Jose, who was out for yellow card accumulation. So Oakland needs to do something basically that they haven't done yet this season, which is beat San Antonio on Friday. That's the task ahead of us. Let's talk about first how this game is maybe affected by the San Diego game. So we mentioned the defense. You mentioned the unplanned sub. That Funmayot injury did not look great. And right, we don't have any solid information on what happened, but it appeared to be kind of a non-contact injury. He's holding the back of his leg, which suggests a hamstring, but that's just a guess that is informed by watching way too many sports over the years. it's a short week, right? This is a Sunday game. The game against San Antonio is on Friday. Even if it's mild, it's hard to see Funmayor being ready to start. So I guess thing one, I shouldn't presume. Let me see if you agree with me. We're going to see the same back three that we saw for the last 60 minutes of the San Diego game. But it strikes me as very, I mean, it's risky because if you lose another guy, we're out of center backs, basically. Mm-hmm. What else are you going to do, right? This team plays a 3-4-3 and they're very good at it. So
right.
I suppose this is a risk you've got to take. But do you think, John, that Oakland does anything else other than change the shape to sort of deal with the fact that we are out of surplus center backs at this point?
Yeah, it's hard to say whether we'll see Funmayor. I mean, just based off your points alone, I wouldn't think so. It's already game week. You know, we're shooting this on Monday and the game is this week. So plus travel time, that's not a lot of time to rehab and try and work out whatever you're dealing with. So, I mean, I think you're still comfortable with what you have. Funmayor's been great as the center in the back three. So now it goes back to Murad. I mean, if this game against San Diego showed anything, it's if you're disciplined, you execute, you can keep up with anybody, you know, especially at this level in this league. Whoever's playing the best day is, odds are, might win, you know, to sound like John Madden there. But
hey, sometimes the simplest things are the most profound.
Yeah, right. So aside from that, I think the question also is, where do we see Charlie Dennis again? Who do we see as the midfield combination? Formella at this point, you're not sure if he's going to be ready. Again, short week of practice, short week of preparation. It seems more so as a larger emphasis is the importance of someone like a JoJo Nane sitting there in the midfield, a veteran presence, commanding, making sure everybody stays in line. Same thing with Mati coming in late. You know, they both had really good game. You know, Mati had nice worked goal, you know, to take advantage of the less man. I mean, Otar was...
Yeah, it almost felt like overkill discussing how beautiful that goal was when they were playing 11 on 8.
Yes, but hey, we got to throw some praise for Mati. His first goal in a Roots uniform, his first goal in his 9-year professional career. So as a defensive midfielder, that's special for him.
Is that for sure his first goal? I was curious about that, and I looked on FB Ref, our source for all things statistics, and they don't have any listed, but they do have him as scoring 2 for the first club that he played for in Argentina. And then there's a note that says that some of these statistics haven't been verified.
Ah, I went to FB Ref earlier. I didn't see that. Either way, it would be his first goal in a very fucking long time.
Very long time. Yeah, I'm sure it felt good. I mean, it was sort of wild how natural it looked. Obvious 1-2 here on the edge of the box. I'm going to just slot it home. Last guy I expected to see that from. But it was very nice. To get back to the San Antonio game, now that we're in the playoffs, I think there was a mindset towards down the stretch that, look, we need the wins. And since we need the wins, you know, what's more important here is scoring goals, right? At the end of the day, more goals wins. So if you think you can get a 3-2 win by putting one of your forwards in the midfield for his playmaking abilities and you know, basically having an offense on the or a team on the field that's got 7 guys you're comfortable going forward, that's great. Different mindset now where, you know, it before a 1-0 loss is the same as a 2-0 loss, right? So you're not worried necessarily about that extra goal. But now, you know, it is important not to surrender the goals because as we saw in the game before the Oakland match this past weekend, you know, you can go to extra time, you can go to penalties, right? 0-0 is a perfectly acceptable result. It's not good for my heart. You know, it's not necessarily good for how much, you know, I'll probably imbibe while watching it, but 0-0 is fine. And it's okay to have fewer attackers on the pitch. And I think part of this is that, again, like you mentioned, Formella wasn't in the 18 against Pittsburgh. He wasn't in the 18 against San Diego. It would be hard pressed, even if he's coming back, you'd be hard pressed to see him in the starting 11, right? You know, at this point, whatever it is that's been bugging him, he's not going to be, like, in all likelihood, you would expect him to be on the bench. So put Dennis back, you know, in the forward line. Have a more classic defensive mid in there and try to win the game 1-0. And if you get lucky, if you get a good bounce, take advantage of it. And then, I guess, try to get under their skin because apparently we're pretty good at that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Charlie, he does, you know, bring a lot to the table. I think based off our conversation yesterday, he definitely sees himself as a midfielder. Said he was loving his time there. I think he feels himself a more natural fit there. But he, with Formella out, you're asked to go up to the left wing. You know, the coach feels that he has better options to make up in the midfield than he would for what he brings at or right wing. Sorry, I said left. But
he can go either side, really.
He can go either side, really, yeah. I mean, on the starting 11 we were given, he was on the left, but he lined up on the right, and Lindo on the left, which says a lot about Lindo as well. You know, his natural ability to play with both feet. I mean, I'm very happy for Lindo. I think he's one of the most underrated players on this team, if not the league. Just, you know, hasn't had his luck with injuries, and when he is in form, you see how special he can be. We've seen that those glimpses this year. I mean, now is the time to play your best soccer. And it seems, you know, this is one of the better performances you know, let's just not pay attention to the season finale, regular season.
It never happened. Nothing happened.
Never happened.
Nothing happened.
Three long time ago at this point.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess I'll say I agree with you that we are likely to see essentially the same rotation next to Jose in the middle of the pitch, 60 minutes of Nane and 30 minutes of Fisore. I think that is almost certainly what we're going to see. I'm fine with it. I think also Fisore especially is very good. We saw last year. He's very good in a system in the 4-2-3-1, which is if they need to, for whatever reason, if they need to deal with the fact that there's only three healthy center backs on the roster, you know, I think his presence on the pitch or on the roster rather is really good for that. He makes a lot of sense in the kind of double pivot you get in a 4-2-3-1. So as much success as this team has had in the 3-4-3, I don't think it's the end of the world if for whatever reason they are forced on Friday out of the back three into a more traditional back four shape. Let's talk predictions, John. What do you think we're going to see on Friday? Actually, before we get there, we keep saying Friday, which is blowing both of our minds. It's really annoying that Oakland has the last matchup in the first round and the first matchup in the second round of the playoffs. Like, What the hell, man?
Yeah, we even looked it up. It doesn't make sense for San Antonio standards and their situation right now. The Spurs play at the same exact time on Friday. Not sure what the front office is thinking here, you know, at least from a revenue standpoint. You think that there's going to be a few of your ticket buyers at the San Antonio Spurs game where most of the advertising is going. But hey, I guess your first place, you're not worried about selling tickets to your first playoff appearance? I don't know. Anyways, what was I going to say?
We're talking predictions now.
Yes, predictions. That is a hard one. I'd like to start off with how we think the match will go, how the flow of the game will be.
The flow? Yeah.
For the Roots. You know, it's hard to say because this is a very defensive team. Can hit you on the counterattack. Roots are trying to play better defense. So it's hard to say. All this tells me low scoring. You want to score early, like the first game, and say, okay, now try to beat us.
Yeah. So I think to that first point, right, we have seen under Delgado that this is not a Roots team that necessarily wants to be on the front foot all match. They have some pretty big possession numbers, but it's not a priority of theirs. San Antonio basically never controls the majority of possession in any of its matches. Like, that's not what they're about. So I think it is important to get them out of that mindset, to put them in a position where they do, in fact, need to score, because the one constant on all of their wins is that they don't have the majority of possession. So if you can get them out of that, then my gut says you're in a better place, and it's going to require probably some real ingenuity. You know, that the one goal Oakland has scored against San Antonio this year was the result of a very nifty little set piece routine. Maybe it's something like that. Maybe it's another Golasso. Who knows? But I think you're right. If this game is going well for Oakland, it's going well because they've gotten an early lead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could definitely see that. And to your point about sitting defensively, I mean, we saw just in this last game, Roots really dropping back into like a back five, you know, Rito really tucking in, Azucar really tucking in, and it effectively became a back five.
Yep.
Sitting really, really deep, making it hard for them to get through, which I think Noah admitted that they sat too deep at times. So this is going to be an interesting way to play out, because even that 1-1, that 1-1 game against San Antonio, we named Paul Blanchet the man of the match because he made some crazy saves. So San Antonio clearly can keep an attacking mindset and make opportunities for themselves if they see fit, you know, to that point. I think we want to score early, try to eke it out, go punch for punch with them, and make sure, just like this game, there's no clear critical looks for the San Antonio attack.
Yeah. I got to be honest. I don't mind sitting so deep in the, against San Antonio that, you know, what we might call too deep in other circumstances. Because if you go back and look at all of the opportunities San Antonio has had in their matches against Oakland, and maybe this is true of their other matches, but I truly do not have time to watch San Antonio FC in addition to all the other sports I watch. They're getting it's a lot of crosses. You know, it's a lot of getting down the touchline and crossing it into the box. It is occasionally something across from deep, but that's where it's coming from. That's where all of their offense, their attack is coming from. So I don't mind sitting deep to sort of neutralize that and limit the opportunities they have for really quality crosses. You know, I think that might be the way to go, especially since you know that Rito doesn't need to start very high up to beat his man down the touchline. Like, he's got the speed to just go whenever. And we have also seen in match after match, I think, that as the game wears on, Asokar seems to get stronger. You know, we see him a lot. We see him involved a lot later on in matches. And it just, my sense is that he's just got incredible physical fitness levels. And as other players wear down, he's wearing down less, more slowly, basically, and is able to do the same kind of thing as the match wears on. So in a game where, you know, the second best outcome here as far as game flow is that there are just no goals for a very long time, right? You know, if it's not going to be Oakland scoring first, then we want to see it, you know, nil-nil at the 75th minute, basically. And that's been Azucar's time to shine. And if that means that we're sitting really deep for the first 60 or 75 minutes, I'm not sure I would be too upset about it.
Yeah, I mean, to your point on Azokar, I mean, it seems like he's been playing better, you know, throughout the season. He could have had two goals in that game. I thought, you know, his shot late in the second half that was called offside. That was a very close call. I mean, props to Memo for that play was a lot of Memo. He took it from before midfield, across the midfield line, into the attack central, and then cut it to the left for the first touch shot. And then, yeah, Memo again passed to Azokar for a header right in close distance, which I think was offside as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
On the rewatch. Yeah. But both still very good plays, nice buildups. So hopefully, I mean, that's why you bring Memo in late in the game, right? To be able to send those long passes and hit those forward runs. It's definitely become a wrinkle so far.
Yeah, it is a weapon if in the worst case scenario that Oakland is down a goal and is chasing late in the game, having a guy who can send the ball in from deep like that is potentially the difference maker here. Fingers crossed we're not chasing a goal. So that's game state. What about result?
Result.
What are you thinking?
Okay. I'm going to throw two in here. I'm going to say Roots win in regulation 1-0 or Roots win in overtime 2-1.
Oh, wow. One of the things that that Peter noted on Twitter is that Oakland is now yet to give up a goal in the playoffs. And he's not here to defend himself, but I worry he has jinxed us. Obviously, I hope somewhere he's knocking on wood and rubbing the heads of bald deities or whatever it is he needs to do.
He has entered the realm of quasi sports writer. He has to bring up these obscure.
Got to bring it up. Oh my God!
He has to. It's painful. Now your obligation.
It's painful, but I think one of the results of having mentioned this out loud is that there will be a goal scored by San Antonio.
Yeah. Peter, you're in the game now, man. Yeah.
I think if I were a betting man, I would be down to one of two options, 2-1 Oakland in regulation or Oakland wins on penalties.
Oh,
Yeah, I think that's one of those two. I think 1-1 after 120 minutes, we go to penalties. And as good as Jordan Farr is, there is no one I'd rather have in net for a penalty shootout than Paul Blanchett, who, as you'll recall, nearly made a spectacular save last season in the Orange County match. He was deemed to be off his line before taking out the Ronaldo damage shot, but it was a pretty good save. I trust him to make a critical save. And basically, you just got to make one, right? Just got to make one. I think most of the time you make one and then you're good.
The last San Antonio game was you had to make about six saves.
I just meant in the penalty shootout. I think he's going to have to make plenty of saves in normal time and in extra time. But in a shootout context, I think I trust him to make the critical save. So those are our predictions. Let's run down the other matches this weekend. Quick hot takes from you, John. So the other Western Conference matchup, Colorado Springs Switchbacks host Sacramento Republic.
Oh, that's a good one.
Not a hot take, John. You can do better than that.
I think the favorite. This isn't going to be a hot take. Not many habaneros. And not one that anybody is going to like, because I think that Sacramento should be walking in as the favorites. And I could see them pulling it out. So that becomes enticing for the Roots. The Roots supporters get this win, and then we have a party down in I guess we can call it a party down in Sacramento, you know.
You know, it looked coming down the stretch like Sacramento had maybe lost their way a little bit. They had consecutive losses to San Antonio, Phoenix Rising, and LA Galaxy 2. And you're like, what is going on there? They salvage a draw with Pittsburgh. And then I think maybe we can give them some credit for knocking Loyal off their game. They took Loyal out 4-0 to end the season. And I don't know what it is, but Loyal seemed to have completely unraveled between that game and their match against Oakland. Like, what a terrible end of the season. But it apparently got... Well, go ahead.
I do have a hot take for Loyal. I mean, they didn't play well. And you see where their manager was during the week.
I think it's an open secret. He's not really the genius behind what they're doing on the pitch. I don't think you can explain Loyal's terrible end of the season with that, personally. I'm sure it doesn't make the players feel great, but my God, I don't think that's three red cards worthy, you know? But it is pretty clear that Landon Donovan is just the public face of things, which is, you know, fine. You know, this is a league that needs all it can get to really get off the ground if we're ever going to compete with the MLS. So I don't mind it. I'm not surprised he's not the guy pulling the strings there. Rarely do you see the best players become good managers. In baseball, who are the best managers? They're like the backup catcher, you know, like Mike Socha or Joe Torre or something like that, right? It's the backup catcher. That's who becomes the really good manager. And I think with one notable exception, that is generally true in the soccer world as well. That is semi-spicy, I'll give you that. But they seem to have fixed Sacramento, because that was a pretty good performance to beat New Mexico United 2-0. Like, New Mexico is a pretty good team. So I think I agree with you that Sacramento is probably favored there. Colorado Springs had some trouble with RGV Toros. Colorado Springs has had some trouble for much of the back half of the season. Maybe they figured something out, but I think I have to agree with you that Sacramento seems better positioned to advance there. All right, let's go to the East. Louisville City hosts Pittsburgh Riverhounds.
You know, I don't think I have many hot takes on these Eastern Conference teams. I barely watch them, but Louisville has been having their own issues with the ownership, the whole... What was it? Sexual misconduct in the work, or a lot of stuff with Louisville City. Maybe that plays a factor here, but I mean, that being said, Louisville's going to be the favorites. They have been throughout the season as a Eastern Conference favorite. So, I mean, my anticipation right now is Louisville, Tampa Bay in the semis.
And that would be Tampa Bay over Memphis 901. I agree with you about Louisville. They look very good. They're in pretty decent form. They have a strange home loss to Memphis 901 in there, but otherwise they are playing very well right now. I don't see them losing. I'm going to disagree with you about the other one. I think Memphis 901 takes it over Tampa Bay.
Ah,
yeah.
Reasons.
I believe in Memphis 901. They seem very good. They're playing at home, and I think ultimately that makes the difference, that they're at home. It'll be close. For sure it'll be close, but I think Memphis takes that one. Well, all right. So that's our predictions for the conference finals then. Oakland, Sacramento, and Louisville, Memphis, which are some geographically pretty spicy matchups. Let's hope that comes to fruition. This week, Friday, Line 51 is the watch party. So hope to see you there if you're not going to make the trek to San Antonio. I know something like 200 of you made the trek to San Diego, but I think San Antonio is a different kettle of fish entirely. See you at Line 51. And of course, since there were three red cards, anybody who retweets this has the chance to win Peter's money. And three chances this time. So
is it three? Is he
three chances? Yes, he has confirmed there will be three different winners. Until we see you on Friday, up the roots.